This is Too Political, the podcast in which two old friends talk about politics, the news, and whatever else we think of. My name's Arthur.
And this is Jason.
And together we're
Too Political.
Hi again, and welcome to Too Political Episode 7, or 007 if you prefer.
Ooh, 007, wow.
I know. Anyway.
You know, we could make a major character in a movie, perhaps.
We could, and make millions of dollars because it's never been done before.
No, perhaps we could make him a pastry chef.
Yeah, no. That works.
Yeah.
Well, first up today, we have Jason's special days, of course. And then after that, we have something very special. But why don't we start with your special days?
My special days are for Monday. Both are for Monday. Victoria Day in Canada, which is they celebrate Queen Victoria, which really doesn't sound all that interesting. But then this one really actually does. It's International Museum Day. And this is when you're supposed to go. And from their website, each year a theme is decided on by the advisory committee. The event provides the opportunity for museum professionals to meet the public and alert them to the challenges that museums face if they are to be, as the ICOM, which is the International Council of Museums, definition of museums, an institution in the service of society and its development. The chosen topic is also discussed in ICOM News. A review of the related activities is produced and made available to members of ICOM. And it's Museums and Tourism for 2009.
Mm.
So I thought that was kind of interesting.
Today we have a special episode. We have our very first guest.
Yay, our first guest. Yay. It's a very special episode. Is this like a very special episode of Blossom, like they used to have in the 80s? Remember all those special episodes on those sitcoms? Anyway, yes, never mind. But this is a very special episode.
Someone else suggested that to me, and somebody else talked about when the cast of Facts of Life went to France. I thought, no, it's not quite that like that. But yes, we have our first guest, and this is a guest who asked to be a guest. Is that right? Yeah. Ask to be a guest. That's how you say that. And so naturally, he's going to be first. And it seemed the perfect guest for the topic that we're going to talk about today. And tell you a bit more about that when we introduce our guest. But once that segment is concluded, we'll be back with comments and the usual wrap-up information. But right now, here's our guest. Well, it's been a long time coming, but we're finally ready for our first guest on the Too Political podcast. And
yay! Yay!
And who better to join us than the master of mischief himself, Peter, a.k.a. Apollonius, who has been on the Amarins podcast in the past, where we talked about the subject of, among other things, of civility on the net and the way people act on blogs and forums and things like that. And Jason and I have talked about this a few times now, and so we thought that we'd like to sort of pursue that subject a bit. And so Peter is joining us today to talk about such things. Welcome to Too Political, Peter.
Thank you so much for having me. And I'd like to first take umbrage for calling me the master of mischief. And...
I thought you might.
How dare you?
Is that in all caps?
Yes,
my
of course
reputation
it is.
Precedes me.
Uh-huh.
Well, also the E's are threes and the R's are fives. And let's see, if there's an L in there, it's done with like, you know, a seven or a pike or...
Yeah, the number of times I've sat and tried to decipher something that somebody's written on the net somewhere. But I digress. Now, of course, Jason and I have talked about civility in a general sense, and Peter and I have talked about, almost in a specific sense, about blogs and forums. But one of the things is, here's the thing. We all know that there has been a growing lack of civility on the internet in political discussions, because that's mainly what we're talking about today. Where during the...
Oh, I'd have to say it's even beyond political. Oh,
absolutely it is. But it's probably easier to focus on the political
well,
stuff.
Well, that's fine.
What I first noticed it was during the last election campaign, back during the primary season, when the Democrats were divided into two bitterly fighting camps, the Hillary supporters and the Obama supporters, who were at each other's throats.
Oh, God. And I was a Hillary supporter, so I got to, like, you know, make all of my long, very, very passionate thoughts on things, and then I had to go lose.
Yeah, well,
And then I had to deal with all of the Obama supporters accusing me of, since I still didn't, like, you know, think he, you know, shot rainbows out his ass or whatever, they started accusing me of, like, you know, wanting to go vote for McCain just because I wanted Hillary to run again in 4 years and da-da-da-da-da.
Yeah.
And it's sort of like, could you be a, like, you know, polite winner and give us a week to, like, recoup from the fact that the person we really wanted isn't going to be look at this other person before you start accusing us of running to the other side? Because really, you're not, like, you know, giving me any reasons to stay.
Yeah, well, there's such a thing as being a gracious winner, after all. But
yes.
Yeah, and during that time, I was neutral right up until, actually, I didn't officially endorse isn't quite the right word because it makes it sound like it's sought after, but announced support
Admit
or whatever.
That you were,
for Obama until it was sewed up. Because I kept saying, and Jason and I actually were saying this as well, that how fortunate the Democratic Party was that it had two such excellent contenders for the nomination running up to the nomination itself. And as far as I was concerned, and Jason, you can disagree with it if you want, but I felt that no matter which one was the nominee, the Democratic Party had the stronger candidate. It didn't matter as far as that goes.
Yeah.
So
I totally agree with that.
Yeah. So from that perspective, I was looking at these debates from, I don't know, kind of a disbelief perspective. Because first of all, I couldn't understand why they were at each other's throats. Yes, you might like candidate A over candidate B or candidate H over candidate B, but I didn't understand why they couldn't see beyond their own, I don't know, partisan isn't quite the right word, but their own particular beliefs. But
no, I think that's the right word to use.
Sorry?
Partisan, I think that is the right word to use.
Well, it probably is. But what I was getting at basically...
Sub-partisan.
It got worse in the general election. We saw all kinds of things going on in the mainstream media as well as on blogs and forums and things where people were saying things that were blatantly untrue, and they still are, as a matter of fact. The whole birther movement among far-right Republicans, for instance. And we don't seem to have recovered from the bitterness of the last election. So my first question is, does it matter?
Does what
does
matter?
Does it matter?
Does it matter?
The bitterness?
Why should we care?
Well, one of the things that concerns me is that the internet is pushed as sort of the end all and be all, and it's going to be this great exchange of ideas, and it's the idea is that, you know, this is how the media and information are going to morph into this, and this is the type of interaction that we're going to get. You know, it's I would almost say that at some point in time, I'm thinking I'm going to see I'm rubber, you're glue in a comment.
I would post a Sorry.
No, go ahead.
I'd post a clarification and say that the internet is being marketed and hyped as the last great, like, you know, frontier for communication. Mm. But really, the people who first started the internet, like back when it was DARPANET, they pretty much had a little tagline saying, be conservative with what you put out there and be liberal with what you take in. And it was, and like, that's not a political perspective. It's just when you're programming, the idea is you have to try your best to maintain and be as close to the standards as you possibly can, because, well, you're going to be writing this and sending these things out to people you don't know, and all they have to go by are these standards that are written down on a piece of paper, and there are going to be misinterpretations and there's going to be mistakes. Yeah. And people are going to be sending them to you, so when you write it, you try and make it as accurate as possible, and when you're reading stuff, you need to try and make it as flexible as possible to, like, deal with the fact that there might not be an angle bracket in the right place, or they might not have closed something out properly. And even if it's, like, in such a state where you can't blow up, you want to try and be as descriptive as possible as, like, what you're trying to do with the stuff that they were giving you as, like, an error message. And so I feel like that applies with all sorts of conversations, too. It's sort of like, don't believe everything you read on the internet. I believe the other litmus test is always 93% of everything is shit. So, and like the usual things, if it seems too good to be true, if it seems too crazy to be true, if it seems like a wacky conspiracy theory, it is, that sort of thing.
Well, but could part of the problem then be that people are expecting too much of the internet? They're expecting it to be, I don't know, this magic town square where everybody can go and meet and exchange ideas, when in fact it's really no different than anywhere else in the world, and people hang with their own kind and people who think like they do, and Maybe it can't be.
I think one of the major things is beyond the internet. It's sort of all, you know, we're all sort of plugged in. I think we interact a whole hell of a lot more than we did, you know, 2 years ago, 5 years ago, 10 years ago, 20 years ago. But I don't necessarily know that we communicate a whole lot better.
True.
You know, I think there's a lot of just this static stuff. I mean, the one of the things that I always find amazing is. I wish I sort of remembered what the article was about, and all of a sudden they'll bring in, oh, but Obama this, and I'm going, we're talking about the Star Trek movie. What does Barack Obama have to do with the Star Trek movie? And then it goes off into about, you know, how would Barack Obama, what character, you know, and you just kind of go, what is this? And yeah. The same thing of you get to the point where you're not – what I notice is, like, if you read a story like in the Washington Post, which most every once in a while I'll look at comments, and you're going down, and at some point in time, it veers off, and you're not really even discussing what the story is about anymore, and it's just like, okay, what? And that seems to be when you're getting into the, you know, I'm your mother wears army boots, and I'm rubber your glue. Only it's you know, it's usually, you're a this, you're a that, you know, what's the the rule about the discussion becomes totally degenerates when Nazi is thrown into the mix. You know, that's sort of a surrender to any sort of logic whatsoever. Although I do find it amusing that, you know, Obama is a socialist. No, he's a communist. No, he's a fascist. And as a friend said to me, don't you have to pick one? They're not overlapping ideologies. They're sort of exclusive to each other. So and that. That type of just sort of name calling and what that, you know, what does that do? What does that, how does that
now, advance now, with the discussion? Internet, it can be all of them.
Well,
the internet allows those ideologies to cross.
Yeah, well, it seems to. But that's actually kind of a point, because there is a lot of this name calling that goes on. And I've said before in various places that I think that a lot of it has to do with the anonymity that the internet provides, because you can pick a screen name and be whoever or whatever you want, and you never know that you're really dealing with what you think you're dealing with, even. I mean, somebody may be saying the most outrageously racist thing, and they're actually, you know, a civil rights worker. That's probably not be the case, but...
Stick with the best example.
Yeah, well, the
they
point
might
is...
be saying that they're an 18-year-old girl when really they're a 46-year-old guy in their mom's basement.
Yeah. Well, exactly.
The most horrifying and common situation out there.
Well, that's exactly right. So. And people sometimes, because of that anonymity, do say things, or the character that they've created, they do say things that they wouldn't otherwise say to somebody's face. But... the thing I'm wondering is, first of all, is there anything that could be done about that? I mean, and obviously, should anything be done? And I don't mean in a legislative sense, like pass laws or whatever. But I mean, for example, what if a forum required somebody to register with their real name and that was verified before they were allowed to post somehow?
That's dependent
sort of thing.
But then what do you do if you get
forums like that already.
Are there?
Well, yeah, that's true. Oh, yeah, there are. But I guess the question is, then, if you get a lot of bad notices, do they boot you? I mean, how does that...
There are several different types. There's, like, you know, completely open forum, which generally just tends to be the cesspit of the internet. Like, basically, there's like things like 4chan and Something Awful, and they're pretty much just like everyone's anonymous. Like, you can't even really specify yourself who you are, and that's kind of an interesting experiment because there's a lot of crap generated. There's a lot of really horrible, awful things generated, but there's also a lot of really funny things generated that, like, is just kind of stupid humor.
Yeah.
Then there's, like, your general topical forums where it's, like, you get all the people together who like one kind of gun, or all the people together who like Mazdas, or all the people together who like a certain form of politics, and then they'll kind of, like, you know, talk about different things, and that's where the battles usually break out, because, like, this person political likes this type of Mazda, and this other person thinks they suck, so... Hmm. And those tend to be moderated, and that's generally just, you have a set of rules that don't be an asshole shall be the name of the law, and...
Right.
If they... And, like, you have the rules, and the moderators tend to be like, you broke this rule, we're doling out this punishment as specified, and really it just boils down to, you need to have a timeout, because you're getting really angry and making personal attacks. And then there are things like development forums. Like, I would say there are coding forums and forums for things like using SAP and Oracle. And they're very rarely, like, in fact, I would say they're kind of over-moderated. So if you, like, tend to make a little bit of a joke or post something in kind of the wrong section, you'll pretty much have five people trying to gain usefulness points, immediately move it into the right spot, and send you a little private note being helpful. And if you say something kind of snarky, it will be deleted within 5 seconds with a note explaining about how we don't allow any snarkiness or fun on this forum kind of thing. So...
Well, that would seem to be going to the other extreme, probably, as opposed to the Wild West free-for-all. And,
but at the same time, it's like that's kind of useful in a place where people are hitting it from Google trying to figure out how to write a certain bit of code. They don't need to see someone making a joke about it outside of the general discussion forum. And some places might not have it because it might be totally dedicated to like getting this build of Ubuntu to work.
Yeah.
So...
Well, one of the things that I've seen a lot on the internet and in the media generally is people saying that the two sides are screaming at each other and they're not listening to each other. And they talk about how there are sites on the internet or even on the in the mainstream media that liberals go to. And, of course, there's plenty that conservatives go to. And they say that like it's a bad thing. So my question is it? Is it so bad for liberals to talk to liberals and conservatives to talk to liberals? Couldn't an argument be made that there's...
No, you mean conservatives talk to conservatives.
Well, yeah. Couldn't an argument be made that there's a sort of a safety valve function built into that where people can just vent to their heart's content about how awful and evil the other side is without actually having to risk engagement with the other side?
Oh, I think that's true, but the sort of...
The problem with that is you're still putting it out there. If you're putting something really hateful out there, people will kind of, like, you know, they'll go see how the other half lives, see them saying something really awful, come back with quotes and links, explain, it's like, they're just a bunch of jackasses. See all these mean things they're saying about us? Let's say mean things about them. It's just kind of like...
But I agree completely with that. The other problem is that you don't hear... the other side. And are you also hearing, you know, you go to some, okay, if the liberals are going to the liberal blogs and the conservatives are going to the conservative blogs, you know, how liberal is the liberal blog? How conservative is the conservative blog? You know, it seems to me you're probably getting the extremes of the sort of the extreme. And if there isn't any other sort of interaction with sort of the rest of the world, so to speak, because I think the vast majority of people are not far to the right or far to the left. They're sort of stuck in the middle, or in the center. And there's no interaction to what I'm going to call like the real world. Then there's this insular view, and you know, how do they interact with sort of the rest of us, or how are they going to interact with the rest of us?
Yeah, but that's like lamenting that all the people in Atlanta don't talk with all the people in New Zealand on a daily basis. It's sort of like semi-unrealistic that all these people would get together and realize it's a wonderful kumbaya moment all the time.
Oh, well,
and
no,
also,
not,
it would just
I'm
be really noisy.
Well, yes, that's true, but I'm not talking about... I'm talking about being exposed to some sort of... If all you're doing is going to whatever the site is and this is how you get all of your news... then, or you know, your political information, then you're not being exposed to anything else. Exposed to anything else. And that I find somewhat worrisome. And I also think that helps people to depict the other side as monsters, whatever the other side might be. You know, it's like, oh, you know, they're supporters of the terrorists. Oh, they're against the First Amendment. And if you can insult somebody, which I find now seems to be the way a lot of this works, if you can insult the person, you then don't and belittle their argument, and you know, you don't have to listen to what might be a reasonable part of the argument. There's, you know, it's again, you know, well, your mother wears army boots, and we're not going to listen to you. I mean, sometimes you just go, you're 6, or are you 8? And it's just amazing that it's, they get down to, they, you sort of wonder, it's a personal insult or an insult, and it's like, you're not really refuting what this person has to say. You know, oh, well, that's just so stupid. Well, that you're an idiot. Well, you're a fascist. Well, you're a communist, and it's okay. Is that all you can say?
Peter has actually talked about what I think is sort of behind all that, and that's what he calls zealotry. He has talked about how ideas become beliefs, and beliefs are immutable things, and they become so adamantly passionate about it that they go on the attack rather than saying, okay, you don't believe as I do. I wonder what that's about. And examining their own beliefs or even considering that somebody might have a different belief that could be valid, it becomes this either-or situation where...
Well, right, just, and it's really and three it's also, things in...
It's you're being lazy.
Yeah.
I mean, if you really, really think about it, I'm just going to call somebody a name. I don't want to take the time to sort of marshal my arguments and respond to this person.
It really isn't laziness as much as I say it is people willing to get angry over something they read on the internet. It's because, honestly, typing out a 15-page response about how you think the other person smells and, like, how this one thing they said obviously means that they have some sort of psychological problem is not an easy thing to do, and it's not something you can do quickly. It's just that you're so angry and incensed over something that they said that you are literally grabbing at everything you possibly can to discredit them and make them feel bad at the same time.
That's true.
I mean, I've been guilty of that, and it literally is one of those things where I'll spend a half hour crafting out some really mean response, and if I'm very, very lucky, I'll catch myself, stop, walk away from the keyboard, and, like, you know, come back the next day to just kind of say, this is what I think about it, and these are the parts I thought were inappropriate and hurtful that I don't want to respond to, other than to say I think they were inappropriate and hurtful. But, like, and I mean, that's one of the, I think that is the main problem on the internet. People can... It's like, I've heard it called the theory of green hair. If you tell someone they have green hair, they'll go, what? No, I don't. And then if you tell someone they're, like, you know, horrible at their job, they'll get really hurt and pissed off and wonder why you would call them of that. And it's like, hey, you need to treat this as the same type of situation where they said you have green hair. You go, wait a minute. Right. No, I'm not. I'm good at my job. Yeah. That I don't need to get terribly upset.
The other thing that also has to be taken into consideration is the total... number of people who read something, and then the percentage of people who comment, and who's most likely to comment. It's sort of like if you go into a store and you get great service, you're not going to go up to the management and say, oh, thanks for the great service. You know, Fred just was great. But if Fred's crappy at his job, you're more likely to go and complain. So I think that's also sort of not perspective, but that's also involved in the whole equation of who's responding.
Well, people do seem to have a tendency to dwell on the negative rather than the positive. That's true. I mean, there's that old saying about retail that a satisfied customer will probably tell one or two people, but a dissatisfied customer will tell 20.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Don't go there. They screwed up this thing. Look, I have the photographic evidence. Da-da-da-da-da.
Yeah.
I don't know. Another aspect, though, is I kind of like, it's the old Dot Parker, like, little one-liner, you can lead a horticulture, but you can't make her think.
Yeah.
There's some people don't want to go out there, don't want to deal with people saying something different. Like, sometimes, the thing is, I feel the internet represents an opportunity, but, like, not kind of a classroom. So the people who are kind of like, I'm getting kind of sick of this job, it really can't all be like this, there's some stuff happening in the world that isn't explained by... what these people are saying, I'm going to go out and find some other stuff. And the real key is, like, getting those people when they show up and being nice enough to them and just kind of being like, well, this is what I think. You don't have to think the same thing. This is just my perspective on it, and there you go. And hopefully in the process you don't piss them off or make a joke that they thought was about them and have everything fall apart, which happens a lot more than it should, but oh well.
Well, and of course, a lot of the stuff is is people reading into it a tone that might not be there. It's also, maybe you had a crappy day at work. Gee, that sounds vaguely familiar. And you read it, and you might read something one way, but if you had a good day or just an okay day, you might read it another way, and you might react. You know, you're pissed off at the world, and you're going to take it out on this comment. And that's, again, there's no way to gauge that at all.
Yeah. Well, my personal strategy is basically what Peter was touching on, and that's to call a personal timeout. If somebody says something that really pisses me off, sometimes I will start doing the comment, knowing full well I have no intention of posting it, but just so I can sort of like get it off my chest and feel better. And then I just do cancel and I never post it.
I'm going to put this in my private journal. Ooh, I remember this one from 5 years ago. I was really pissed then. I can't believe I said that about his mother. But
yeah,
my main problem is I don't do that as much as I should, and I recognize this problem. Well, and I get in trouble.
Well, I think we'd all be better off if people did a little bit more of that and withheld some of their vitriol. But some of it, I think, is caused by the fact that some positions are sort of so diametrically opposed that it's very difficult to see that there could be any middle ground. And it sort of lends itself to people taking extreme positions on an issue and positions on which they're not prepared to compromise. And it's particularly true, in my opinion, around things that have to do with religion, because religion is more emotion than it is thought, which is not to say that people don't think about their beliefs and all that. What I'm saying is that they react from an almost visceral level. They're reacting from this core feeling they have rather than thinking about what they're saying sometimes. And I don't actually know personally that there's any way around that. I don't know that there is a way to, make such discussions more civil if people are saying, I'm right because God said this, you're wrong because God said this, and then that's it. Well, how can you argue with that? You can't have a discussion about an issue where somebody's claiming that their deity is dictating their position. Thoughts?
That's called walking away. You can do a little bit on that, but then, I mean, reading comments, and I don't remember what the story was, but that this is sort of what they got into when they just started quoting the Bible and people were doing this verse and that verse, and I went, okay, what's in the entertainment section for today? it was just, you have to reach a point where it's not going to be solved. And the thing that's interesting about that is the vast majority of people who are sort of commenting along those lines don't realize that. And after a while, it sort of becomes amusing because it's like, don't they get it? They're not going to change the other person's mind.
Yeah.
There isn't a way around that. There isn't a way to sort of, if it, goes over the line, then, or if you feel that goes over the line, if there's a way to report it, then, report it. Most of the, newspapers have, report abuse, or there's some sort of way to indicate that this has gone over the line.
Yeah.
And I think that's the only, that's what you have to do with it. There isn't any way around that, unfortunately. Or maybe fortunately, I'm not sure.
It's a difficult thing, especially for a country like the U.S., which is ostensibly a secular country, despite what some people would say. It was set up that way to be a secular country, and there's the separation between church and state, and yet religion keeps intruding into the public space. It's being forced into the public space, I should say. It's not that religion does it; it's people who are doing it, and it is all on the right. It's not on the left anymore. It was in the 60s during the civil rights struggle, but at the present time, and this could change because it does from time to time, but at the present time, the religious aspect is on the right. And I think that what happens a lot of times is that people on the left see these people spouting religious things. They're quoting the Bible, apparently. I don't know because I've never go back and check to make sure the quotes are even accurate. But they're quoting the Bible, and the people on the left go, well, I don't believe that, so you're a fuckwit, instead of saying, well, hang on a minute. What is it specifically that your objection is? And so then it becomes this big bun fight going on over religion that actually has nothing to do with whatever the issue of the day that they're talking about is. And there's numerous issues. It could be about abortion. It could be about something to do with gay and lesbian rights. It could be about immigration, for crying out loud. People find a way to bring religion into such discussions. So I guess coming back to what I was saying, that if religion is at the core of a lot of these fights between left and right, I'm personally not optimistic that there is any way to find a civil middle ground, unless people are willing to talk about things outside of the context of religion, and certainly people on the far right are not willing to do that.
Well, it's two ways. It's kind of, if the mountain won't come to Muhammad. So, like, if you find the common ground, because it's basically, it's one of those things where it's the religion is being used as kind of like a guide for morality, because the guide for morality, because the code of law is apparently lacking according to what these according to what some of the religious people are wanting or what they feel they need. And so it's sort of like, well, you go to them with questions of propriety. It's sort of like, well, doesn't the Bible also say that you're not the one to judge, God is? And also, doesn't the Bible say that, like, everyone is screwed up, so...
Yeah.
Like, those sorts of things. And I've, like, known people who are religious and have had lots of conversations about this, and they're just sort of like, oh, I don't agree with this position. Some people do. I still talk with them, and it's, like, just a difference of opinion, really. Yeah. And I try not to get in shouting matches with them, because then we don't get anywhere. And so it's once again all those things where you have to eschew your need to be mean to the other person because they're saying something you don't want to hear.
Yeah.
Well, in fact, that's where I have a lot of fun, just like taking things that I'm pretty much a big old liberal, but I really enjoy taking sort of the liberal hard lines and occasionally questioning them. And ooh, that pisses people off sometimes to see someone who, like, knows the line and is still kind of picking it apart and going, well, this still doesn't really make sense. I don't understand why we have to just flat out hate this.
Yeah.
That seems a bit extreme. And then, ooh, someone will get mad at you. So mad, but oh well.
Well, that's actually a larger issue, I think, because especially if you're talking about the religious sphere, because there aren't enough people on the center left who will take on the right wing on religious issues. And I've complained about this before, both on the podcast, my blog, and elsewhere, that there are no liberal theologians. None. I mean, you used to have the Bishop Spong, but I can't name a single liberal religious leader. Not one. I can name you probably, if I thought about it, I could probably name a dozen right-wing ones, but not a single liberal one. And now some of that, I admit, is the fault of the media, because they always go to the right wing because They're
better television.
Exactly. they make better TV. And nobody knows any of the left-wing ones, and maybe they're not articulate. I don't know. Maybe there really are none. But my argument has always been that the people who are religious but who are on the left end of the spectrum have a duty to stand up to the people on the right and say, no, you're wrong about that. Or our religion doesn't believe as you do. But the problem is that, especially when you're talking about religion, it's not just that they're saying that their God says that this position is the only correct position. They're also saying we are the only ones who are the true Christians, because it is the Christians who are doing it mostly in the U.S. We are the true Christians. The rest of you, you're not.
Isn't that the Republican Party? Oh, no, I'm sorry.
That's exactly it, because the Republican Party has been captured by the religious right in America, and there's very little left. There are numbers of people who self-identify as Republican now are almost identical with the number of those who self-identify as evangelical Christian. And that trend is only going to accelerate unless they change their tune, which isn't likely to happen with people like Boss Limbaugh calling the shots, but be that as it may.
My feeling is that that's kind of an act of hubris to sit there and go, we're the only real Christians. And I think a lot of the more moderate ones don't feel a duty because they figure it will just fizzle out. And they don't feel a duty to so much go up to them and scream you're wrong in their face. They're just kind of sitting there going, we disagree, you haven't convinced us, and it looks like more people are dwindling away from your ranks because it ain't working for them. So
and I also think that it's sort of the way liberal, or at least I'm going to think this is sort of my interpretation of liberal Christianity, is you don't challenge people that way.
Yeah, that's true. As a matter of fact,
it's not the way it's I also think it's very much with liberal Christianity, it's deeds, not words.
That's true too. But a good thing to as an example of that was when I was in Chicago, and I hadn't lived there all that long, but I was part of this statewide gay and lesbian civil rights organization in Illinois at the time. And there was some Christian preacher, right-wing Christian preacher, who was saying the most outrageous things about gay people. I said, some things don't change. Anyway, and I took issue with that, as you might expect, and I said to a friend of mine who was a minister, I said that that person wasn't a real Christian. And she said to me, you have no right to question their Christianity because you don't know what's in their heart. And I, of course, being a good liberal, took that to, oh, yes, I mustn't criticize them. And I think it's a failing on the left, from religious people on the left, to just say, okay, well, they believe differently, but they're a Christian as well if they believe that. Well, see, I personally don't buy that. And I don't, I think that sometimes the left is too left. It's too liberal in the broader sense of the word, too accommodating, too willing to just let anything go, too tolerant, even. Which is,
I don't know. I think maybe in the religious.
I'm talking specifically in the religious sphere, not in politics generally.
I think that I honestly think that they're just good at doling out enough rope.
Well,
they'll kind of entertain them just long enough to get them really into the crazy zone, and then go, "We're sorry, we're just not buying it." And then, kind of like, you know, in doing that, everyone else gets to see them get into just enough of the crazy zone that they kind of go, "Ooh, this is so not me," and like, you know, divert to something that's a bit less angry or a bit less aggressive.
Well, as a non-religious person, my tactic has always been not to talk about their religion, but to talk about their politics. And when they say something that is an obvious lie, to call them on it. And when they're obviously distorting reality, real facts, to call them on it and not let them get away with it. But not to talk about the religion as such, because the religion is irrelevant, except that they're using the religion as a weapon. But apart from that, the fact that they're Christian or I don't know, the worshippers of this flying spaghetti monster or whatever, doesn't enter into it. What is the issue is what they're doing to try to enact their agenda, whatever it is. And the fact of the matter is that all and both ends of the political spectrum and everything in between uses the information at their hand to their own advantage. In other words, they'll take a fact and they'll phrase it in a certain way, frame it in a certain way to make it more supportive of their point of view, then they may, if they're feeling desperate, they may even lie. I hesitate to use the word, but sometimes they will. So the right, in that sense, isn't unique. I mean, it's not like they just do it probably a bit more than the people on the left do these days because they've got more to lie about, maybe. I don't know.
I think they do it about the same as everyone else. They just have the camera pointed at them more. Because it's more vogue to kind of go, ooh, they're lying, look at what they did. But the left is going to be lying and passing off some stuff when they're feeling a bit desperate, too.
Well, what I've noticed about the left lately is they're more willing to be forgiving of things I don't think they should be forgiving of. If it's a Democrat or a liberal who's doing it, they'll be like, oh, well, that's not quite right, but okay, we'll just wait for things to get right. Whereas if the right lies, they'll call them on it and they'll say your position is completely wrong because this isn't true, this is true, you know, that sort of thing. So I guess I get impatient with the left sometimes when they give their side a pass, but they'll go after the people on the right. I fully understand the tactic of not speaking ill of a person who believes as you do, because you know you're sort of doing and your own goal kind of situation there, where you're doing the work of the opposition if you attack your side. But there comes a point where you have to say, "Now, hang on a minute, this is wrong." And I'm thinking specifically of the refusal of the Obama administration to prosecute the torturers, for instance. But there could be any number of other issues that maybe other people care about deeply as well. But I don't know if I guess what I'm getting at with all of that is that if the left won't criticize themselves, and certainly the right won't, how can you expect that there would be any kind of reasonable and rational discussion about issues when neither side is willing to do any sort of realistic self-examination?
I think one of the things that's interesting in comments and on the airwaves, you know, on television and radio, is all of a sudden this big switch in who believes in the First Amendment to the Constitution. You know, when George Bush was president, the Republicans couldn't be bothered with it. And now that Obama is president, and I'm thinking most, you know, of Cheney, the loose cannon running around, is, oh, and all these comments from the Democrats, well, he shouldn't be saying this stuff. It's like, hello. What did we just have for the last 7 years? We had criticism of the war, and now suddenly, I mean, I think Cheney is completely nuts, but this is actually, well, you know, he should be going back to Wyoming, and I'm sure the buffalo and the deer would be really proud to hear his stuff, or he should go back hunting. And it's just like, I totally disagree with every single thing this sort of nutcase is doing. But if he's invited on and he's speaking his mind, he has a right to do that. Oh, it's inappropriate and blah, blah, blah. And it was just like, my goodness, what are we reading here? Oh, no, we're not reading about comments about the war. We're reading about Cheney's comments about whether we're going to be safe or not. And it's just amazing to me, this switch. It's just like, huh, our guy is in power, or as the case may be, our guy is out of power, and now it's okay to realize that, you know, with the Republicans, oh, there are 10 amendments to the Constitution. The Bill of Rights is 10 amendments, and it starts with number one, not number two. And for the Democrats, it's just like, this First Amendment thing, what the hell is that? It's been amazing to me over, you know, since this, it's just been like a complete switch. And it's just like, you know, guys, if it was okay to criticize the Bush administration, which it was, then it's okay to criticize the Obama administration. You can refute what the person criticizing the Obama administration is doing, which you can do with Cheney. But this notion about how he shouldn't be talking and you know, it's unseemly for, you know, a vice president to be doing this, which I think it probably is, but he still has that right. It's fascinating to me.
If anything, I read that as sort of like, ooh, Cheney's making some good criticisms, just because otherwise people wouldn't be freaking out so much. It's like, shut him up! Oh my God, why is he still talking? Nobody likes you, go home.
Well, that's the thing for me. I mean, I do think it's unseemly for him to be trying to undermine the successor administration. But the thing for me is that what he is saying is just so insane most of the time. He's just nuts. And the reason I react the way I do and wish he would shut the fuck up is because I thought we were finally rid of him. We had eight years of that arrogant prick on television pontificating and just being a total bastard. And I thought we were finally rid of him. And now he's sticking his ugly face back in our faces again. And I just wish he would go away. It's not that I don't think he's got a right to speak. He's publishing his memoirs soon. He'll spend all of that time talking about how evil the Democrats are and liberals and how only him and his people are saintly. We know all that. And that's fine. And he's going to go on a book tour promoting his stupid memoirs. But shut the fuck up and go away. We voted your kind out of office. I don't want to hear you anymore. That's why I react the way I do.
I wonder, have we ever seen that sentiment.
Have we ever seen him? I've felt that
on so many forums. Ugh. So mad.
Have you seen him in direct sunlight? Has he ever been in direct sunlight? Have we ever seen him in direct sunlight?
No, I don't think so. No, it's
Or do we know what that portrait up in his attic looks like?
Well, actually, around the time of the inauguration, I thought he looked terrible. He's looking better now than he did then. That's for sure. No, I'm just, it's Cheney in particular. Cheney was the person that I spent most of my time criticizing back during the Bush-Cheney regime.
No, really? I would never have known that. There's a shock.
I believe then, I believe now, and I've seen no evidence to convince me to the contrary that Cheney was running the country and Bush was a figurehead. And I was so glad to be rid of that crew on January 20th. On some levels, even if McCain had gotten in, God forbid, I would have felt better. Oh, no, that's probably not true. But I despise Cheney, and I want him to go away. I'm so sick of Dick Cheney. It's not even the right wing in particular, because I occasionally watch Fox Noise, and I occasionally go over to the Wingnut websites to see what the opposition is saying. But Dick Cheney, I don't need to hear anything more from him. I know what he thinks about everything, and I don't care. He is a has-been. He's yesterday's news, and I just want him to go away.
And I'm going to put forth the forum-like prescription and say just ignore him.
Oh, I do, for the most part. I've had my say about him, and I'm not...
I know, but getting into the whole, I want him to go away, I want him to shut the fuck up, kind of gets into the, like, hateful position where suddenly you start dedicating a lot more time just going off about how much you don't like the man. And I've been on the receiving end of that sort of hatred because I pissed on someone's argument and got them all pissed off, and they're like, and they didn't sit there and go, I disagree, or... Well, you have a point, but I still think that, like, you know, you're taking a lot of liberties with it. It was just turned into, God, I hate you. I hate you so much. I wish you would leave. Somebody ban this asshole. God, why do I have to listen? I'm just kind of like, that stuff kind of hurts. So don't put that negative energy out in the world. Just kind of sit there and go, oh, I don't think I have anything more to learn from this man. I don't want to pay attention to him anymore.
Well, somehow I don't think that Dick Cheney would be hurt by anything that I would say.
Who knows? Maybe that's why he's such a dark, malevolent creature. So many people just hate him constantly. He's just a sink for all the he's the point for all the world swords at the moment, and he's just lashing out.
Maybe he's evil because somebody took his favorite toy.
Yes,
somebody took his shotgun.
Rosebud. Oh, sorry.
Yeah. Or that what is it? The Santa Claus is coming to town, isn't it? In where the evil guy is evil because he never got a toy when he was a little boy. But I digress.
Yeah. Oh, that's like off the deep end there. Yeah.
Actually, I think it's Frosty the Snowman. Now that I think about it. But this is obviously a subject that's not going to be going away anytime soon. And I'm sure we're going to be talking about this more in the future. And certainly the purpose today wasn't to try to solve it, but just to kind of, maybe shed a little bit of illumination on what's going on and what we think about it.
I think it's the important thing is that people have to recognize that it goes on and sort of try and go in and, you know, not sort of go off the deep end. I mean, sometimes you think you need to call people on stuff, but to try and do it in such a way that it's not, again, you know, reduced to I'm rubber, you're glue, or your mother wears army boots. You know, it's again, it's my mother's favorite phrase about we don't call our brother stupid, even if he is. You've got to come up with a way of because it's so much easier to do, oh, you're a stupid idiot. Oh, you know, well, you must, you know, live in a hole in the ground and all sorts of things like this. And it's just a very, I think the thing that sort of concerns me at some point in time is if people are doing this anonymously, is that they're going to start doing it actually to people's faces, and won't that be fun? I think you just have to be aware of sort of the nuts you're not going to, I think, or what you might consider to be the nuts, you're not necessarily going to change their mind or change their opinions, and unless it's... Again, it's you sort of need to sometimes go, okay, I'm turning the page.
Okay. So, Jason, basically, you're advocating stepping back. Peter, what would be your advice for people dealing with these things?
I would say sit down. Think if you can honestly make a point that will give them more insight into your point of view without trying to upset them. If you can't, because either... you're so angry that there's no possible way, or there is absolutely no common ground you can find, then save the keystrokes.
I agree with both of you, and I'd add that probably if you're going to leave a reply to some comment somewhere, it's probably best to stick to the facts and not try to deflate their emotion, but just their reasoning in some cases. Maybe poke holes in their theory or whatever.
But and then you also have to understand that if you're making some sort of a comment, that people are going to react to it, and sometimes you're just going to have to go, okay,
yes, because anything you put out there, you're probably going to get something back.
In those cases, occupatio is real fun. Just sit there and go, and this doesn't mean I'm blah, 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 and also a personal attack on me is not going to in any way, like, you know, those sorts of things.
Yeah. Even if you wonder what planet the other person's on, if that helps, that's okay too.
Yeah. Always helpful.
Yes. Well, Peter, we'd like to thank you very much for joining us today.
Our first guest. Yay!
I'm happy to be first guest. Thank you so much
even
for having
me. Even my cat Sam is excited. He came in and he says, oh, you have your first guest.
Well, Peter, why don't you tell the folks where they can find you?
If you like to find me or my podcast or anything, you can go to epilonius.net. That's epilonious. I have a podcast, I have some blog posts, all that fun stuff, and that's all I have to say about that.
And I will, of course, put links in the show notes.
Oh, thank you.
But thanks again for joining us. It was fun.
Yes.
Thank you so much for having me.
Bye.
Bye.
Well, once again, we'd like to thank Peter for joining us today.
Yes, thank you very much, Peter.
Good for him to do that. And now some of you may have strong feelings about some of the things we've talked about, which is great. We'd encourage you to join the discussion. You can ring our comment line on 206-426-0527.
I'm sorry, Arthur, what's that number again?
That number again is 206-426-0527. And of course, you can always leave a comment at twopolitical.com, our site, and you can send us emails and all that other wonderful stuff. But if you have a strong feeling, by all means, join the conversation, because that's what it's meant to be. But speaking of comments, how's that?
Well, that was so swift. You're so good at segueing to the next topic.
Well, we do have comments from the last episode, the previous episode. And the first of those was from Roger Green, who said provides a link to an article about how Pat Buchanan explains how the GOP can come back in 2012, which is, of course, we've talked about how and if the GOP can recover. And he says, the thing I really want to know is the first comment about Obama, the magic Negro. Don't know if I should laugh or cry. Now, I did go to the article, and it's from a right-wing site called Human Events. And they call themselves the headquarters of the conservative underground, or whatever that's worth. And I actually didn't see the comment that Roger was referring to. Although, I just noticed now I didn't do click to view all. Barack the Magic Negro thing, of course, comes from the Rush Limbaugh show. And has taken on a life of its own. It was offensive when it first came out, and it's still offensive. But
no, really? Something on Rush Limbaugh's show is offensive? I'm shocked. I'm shocked. Thank God I'm sitting down.
Yeah, I know. It's a frightening thing. The point of this article basically was it was saying, he didn't put it exactly like this, but Pat Boy was saying that essentially the Republicans deserved to lose in the last election. But he said that it boils down to that there are two hopes for the Republicans to come back in 2012. The first is that Barack Obama can't be the candidate of change when he'll be the incumbent, which, of course, I think is stupid because, I mean, that it's not impossible for an incumbent to position him or herself as the candidate of change. It's been done plenty of times before.
Well, yeah, and you can say that you're continuing the change.
Exactly, which... will depend on what happens between now and then, of course, but that's
another day.
But the other thing he said, and I'm going to read it, it's very short. He says, among values voters, fully 30% of the electorate, McCain won 65% to 32%, or by 2-1. What these numbers demonstrate is that liberals and neocons instructing the GOP to dump the social, moral, and cultural issues are counseling republicide. When African Americans who gave McCain 4% of their votes in California gave Proposition 8, prohibiting gay marriage, 70% of their votes, why would the GOP give up one of its trump cards? Not only middle America, but among minorities. A conservative who could have sharpened the social, moral, and cultural differences might, from the exit polls, have done far better. And that's, of course, utter nonsense. The Republican campaign started to fail when Sarah Palin started pushing all these social issues.
And it's the economy more than anything else, but it assumes a sort of a zero sum game that you motivate the base, but would you not then motivate the sort of people who can't stand this, and then are you then going to turn off people who essentially say, we don't want this?
Yeah.
Especially when he's running for re-election, that might work. I don't see how you do that in the election that we just had, the way it was set up, that it's like, no, there was a huge undercurrent of, whatever happens, we want you to work together. We need to have things done. And I think this would have been I think it would have made the situation worse, because I think there were people who were going, okay, I don't have a job. I'm worried about losing my job. My 401k is now worth $1.29. Yeah. And you're talking about these things that at probably any other election would be important, but they're not now.
Yes.
We were in free fall, and that I think it would have Maybe it would have energized your base, but it's a zero-sum game, that there's some sort of a reaction to it as well.
No, I agree with all that. But the thing is, he makes the fallacious assumption, that's a word that he would like, that all of those 30% would put values as their top priority over everything else. And among Republicans, the few who are left, the somewhere between 21 and 29%, depending on which poll you listen to, they're not necessarily all of these so-called values voters. Some of them would be more accurately described as libertarian, who may be conservative on quite a few issues, but not necessarily on social issues, or at least that's not their prime motivator. And he's assuming that all of those voters that are left in the Republican Party would vote on these social conservative issues. And he's making a huge leap of faith when he decides that. But even if he's true, even if he's correct, I mean, and he gets a quarter of the population, which is, you know, damn the torpedoes, full speed ahead, we're going to fight on these social issues. So what? He still has to win over the other 75% of the people, and the majority of them don't care about these social issues, or at the very least, they're not their motivated.
Right. I would disagree with don't care, but they're not.
It's not the motivating factor.
Yes. Yeah. It's not going to be the primary issue. Now, again, in 3 years, when who knows what, you know.
Anyway, next was Tim Carmel, who said, "Love the latest show. I'm wondering if the right wing is spinning down the toilet in the same direction in New Zealand as it is in the U.S. Oh, wait, that's a hoax, as Arthur told us about many ages ago in the Amarins podcast. He's referring to the so-called Coriolis effect and the direction the water goes down the drain. And it's the same in both hemispheres. Anyway, he goes on, go Maine. We need New Hampshire for gay marriage. I wouldn't be surprised if New Zealand follows the trend before long. And, of course, since then, New Hampshire is poised to adopt marriage equality. The governor has gone to the legislature wanting some sort of stronger protections for religion. And once they do that, he's going to sign it into law. So that will be all of the Northeast apart from Rhode Island. And that's a pretty amazing development. I don't know about New Zealand.
Oh, I don't think that's an amazing development, really.
Well, just that it's happening so fast.
Oh, okay.
The plan was for it to be much farther out. To take much longer years, and it's gone much faster than anyone suspected it would. There was a study that I just saw today that showed that in the 5 years since marriage equality has existed in Massachusetts, that the state has gained $111 million in revenue from those marriages. And, you know, in a bad economy, that's something that states got to consider.
Mm-hmm. That's true.
But, but New Zealand, I don't think there's going to be marriage equality here anytime soon. The prime minister doesn't think there's any reason to change the existing civil unions law. And there's certainly no groundswell pushing in that direction. So I don't think it's going to change anytime soon, but I think it's inevitable because most people, when they talk about civil unions, talk about it as if it's a marriage anyway. So it's just, there will be a time when it will just become a matter of semantics, which is which, but we're not there yet. And the final comment was from Lord Byron, who said, swine flu equals babe flu. Hey, guys, you're going to alienate the Minnesota Blue Ox fans as well as the beef industry. And he says, reclosing the U.S. borders is useless, according to U.S. authorities. What about Bush's shutting down travel related to HIV? Those are still in place, not removed even by the current administration. Right-wing media, they get it. It's called your money. The royalties can go to pay for more ideological crap thrown up before you on the tube, which is very true, and which is why I wouldn't subscribe to any of those podcasts from Fox. They're not going to get 1 cent of my money. But about the travel ban, that's a very good point. There is absolutely no reason to keep the travel ban in place, and yet the Obama administration has done nothing about changing that either. And one of the probably most high-profile casualties of that will soon be Andrew Sullivan, the gay journalist who's probably best known for his column The Dish, who will be forced to leave the U.S. soon. He's HIV positive, and he can't get a residence permit because of that. He's married to an American citizen. I think it was in Massachusetts, if I remember correctly. Must have been. At any rate, but of course, because of Defense of Marriage Act, that marriage isn't recognized under U.S. law, and he can't stay in the U.S., and he will have to leave.
Have to say, I won't miss him.
No, he says a lot of things that are utter crap, but he has a viewpoint that it certainly deserves to be heard, even if I disagree with him. But the larger issue here isn't him in particular. It's just the fact that the U.S. is one of the, I think it's the only Western country left that has an HIV travel ban in place. New Zealand certainly doesn't. Australia doesn't. Canada doesn't. There are other, these various countries have other bans in place, but not relating to travel and immigration. And it's about time the U.S. sort of joined the rest of the world. But
yeah, I agree on that. But I would say that in the most likely reason that it has not been addressed is they had babe flu, and they're not fully staffed. And this is something that would be I would think, in all likelihood, be directed by the political appointees within, what would it be, Health and Human Services, I guess.
I've forgotten who's in charge of that.
Or Homeland Security. I'm not sure how. But my guess is that this is more, they don't have bodies and chairs to do it.
Well, that's part of it. But part of it has been that ever since the travel ban has gone into place, there have been public health officials who are not really very interested in making it easy for HIV-positive people to enter the United States. The presumption has been that they must be excluded. And for ordinary people, I mean, I'm not talking about the high profiles, because high-profile people can always find a way around the rules. But for ordinary people, it can often be very difficult to circumvent these bans, because the authorities in charge of it just aren't interested in helping HIV-positive people to get into the U.S. as tourists.
Mm-hmm.
And the problem is that if somebody is on medication and that's found when they go through customs, then they could be deported on the spot. And then barred from entering the United States. So the risks to people for not disclosing their status are really pretty high.
Right.
But I don't know. It's part of the larger immigration thing. Of course, I've talked about this on my Amarin's podcast. I don't know. It's about time that they started moving on some of these issues, the Obama administration, instead of paying some lip service. It's about time we started seeing some action on some of them, I think. But that's my feeling. And of course, listeners may disagree with anything that I or Jason says or our guests, and you're welcome to leave a comment. And if any of you are interested in being a guest, contact us on that as well. Peter did, and by all means, feel free to do so yourself. The comment line number is, again, 206-426-0527. And that's in the show notes, as will links to the special days will be in the show notes as well. And you can leave a comment at twopolitical.com, and you can send an email to me at Arthur, A-R-T-H-U-R, at twopolitical.com, or Jason at twopolitical.com. And where can the lovely people find you, Jason?
Lovely people or non-lovely people. I don't discriminate.
You can find me at
jasonsviewfromdc.blogspot.com.
And
they can read all about my incredibly wonderful trip to New York.
Indeed. And with photos.
With photos, yes.
And, of course, I can be found at amarinspodcast.com, and there are links to both our sites in the show notes. I'm also going to be taking part in Pride 48, which is a weekend extravaganza at the end of June, where various podcasters will be streaming live that weekend. And
will there be singing and dancing?
I don't know, because I don't know what some of the others are going to do.
Oh, okay.
Actually, for that matter, I'm not sure what I'm going to do.
I mean, extravaganza sounds like a production number to me, you know.
Well,
or explosions or something like that, you know. Is it going to be like, we're going to blow up the Death Star or...
Well, there may be gaseous explosions, you never know.
Oh, well, that would be true. That would be more like an Adam Sandler type movie.
Could be.
That's true. Okay, well, you know.
But you can go to pride48.com if you want to know the details about the weekend in general, or you can always go to amarinspodcast.com, because I do have links there. Matter of fact, you should go that way so I get credit for sending people.
That's true. Yes. Yes, that's exactly the way you should do it.
Well, thanks for joining us, and we will be back next time for more fun and frivolity.
And when will that be?
In 2 weeks' time.
Very good. He got it right this time.
For a change.
I'm sorry. Correct.
Yes. Thank you.
Never right. Always correct.
Exactly.
Yes. And we're I'm sort of punchy because I didn't have much sleep this weekend because my alarm went off in the middle of the night and sort of scared the crap out of me, but there wasn't anybody in my house. So that was a good thing. Anyway, I'm going to bid everyone for our listeners in the United States of America, a wonderful Memorial Day weekend, and hope we have actually decent weather because in Washington, it's just rained. So anyway, and that is my send-off. Then so it is goodbye from Washington, D.C.
And from Auckland, New Zealand. Bye.
Bye.